Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Welcome to High Velocity Radio, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. Stone Payton, Lee Cantor here with you this afternoon. And today's episode is brought to you in part by Safe America CEO Network. Join an elite network of C-level executives dedicated to helping protect America. For more information, go to safeamerica.org/CEO-network. Lee, you ready for this one?
I am excited about this one. Important topic.
This is going to be a fun segment. And immediately after, I'm going to do just like Obama at that press party. I'm going to drop the mic. I'm headed to exotic Tallahassee, Florida for my nephew Ryan's graduation. So a little shout out to Ryan for graduating high school. And there may be some festivities after that. How about you? What are you doing after the show?
I'm heading back home to do some work on the after show work that goes into producing a show of this caliber.
Yeah, I wouldn't know anything about that part. So a little bit later in the program, we're going to have back in the studio the lady who I guess has become like our capital columnist, particularly with respect to the topic that we're going to cover today. But she's been in a couple of times and we're delighted to hear from her. We're going to talk with Darshoon Kendrick. But before that, first up on High Velocity Radio this afternoon, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce a gentleman who titles himself Enabler with the Raise Forum. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, Mr. Barry Etra. How are you, man?
Great, thanks. Thanks for having me on the show.
Before we get too far into the show, can you share a little bit about Raise? What are you guys up to?
The Raise Forum has been a brainchild of mine for a couple of years, and the question was, how do you really turn Atlanta, granted, eventually, into Silicon Valley, New York, or Boston?
So you think that's possible?
In
your
head,
it's possible.
Look, they didn't become Silicon Valley, New York, and Boston immediately, but they developed really three things. First, you have, the activities first, but after the activity, you got to keep senior funding there, because if you can get your senior funding there, the firms stay there.
Right.
Secondly, you have to have an atmosphere of collaboration and not competition.
Right.
Which we still haven't quite gotten here yet. And the third, eventually you have the customers here. Now, we have the customers here for lots of things already. But we haven't had a controlled environment, and we haven't had enough people focused on investing in these kind of companies.
Now, when you say customer, how are you defining that?
Whatever is being developed, the customer. So what are we great at here? Fintech. Cybersecurity,
healthcare IT.
Yeah, healthcare IT. Lots of financial transactions, period. We are the credit card processing capital of the country.
Right, which not everybody realizes around the country.
And of course, there's tons of healthcare here too.
A lot of marketing automation seems to be popping up.
Yeah. This is, and of course, we're heavily influenced by the ATDC because that is the oldest incubator accelerator in America, I think. And college-based, and they are tech. I mean, even their name is Georgia Tech. I mean, that's what they do. And there are a lot of other really good companies around, and there's nowhere for them to go. No forum. And if you read the Atlanta Business Chronicle, the thing you see all the time is we need more senior money here. We need more funding for the good companies so they don't get filled in it elsewhere and leave.
And then, so the purpose of the Raise Forum is what?
Is to help fund Southeast companies with Southeast investors and thus grow the whole Southeast. That whole ecosystem can grow.
Now, what is the relationship with Emory University?
Well, when I first came up with this, a couple of people helped me and I thought, okay, this is a great idea. But it was just a great idea with a few other people working on it. So I went to the guy who ran the entrepreneurship program at Emory, who is not an academic. Here's a guy who started and sold 9 companies before he ever taught a class. And I said to Charlie Getz, is his name, and I said, you understand the value of this. You understand that Emory, for all their entrepreneurship efforts, has not gotten into this world yet. And we can help this whole thing grow by filling in the spots in the gap, the gaps in there that aren't filled now.
Now, what was the lowest hanging fruit? Like, what gap did you go after first?
We said we're going to have a healthcare bias, which we do. I'd love to do it all healthcare, but there's just not enough. We're looking at companies that are post-revenue and now need $1 million.
So plus. Not ideas on a napkin.
No. These are farther along. We do a fair amount for ideas on a napkin, and we do a fair amount for the next round. It's when you get to about $1 million, you're essentially above most groups in this town and this part of the world, except venture, which is like a needle in a haystack most of the time, mm-hmm. or private equity. But they won't talk to you until you hit 10 million in sales in a couple
of
years.
Right, so you're kind of like a stage.
I've heard people call it the valley of death, that this raise. So we are trying to, by making sure we have active investors, higher level investors, syndicate groups to help fund companies here.
Now, what's your biggest challenge, to find the investment groups or to find the companies at that stage?
There's no challenge finding companies. Finding great companies at that stage is harder. We've done a half decent job over the couple of times we've done it. I don't know if we could do it better. We might be able to. The harder part is finding the investors and getting them to put their money where their mouth is, essentially, which is show up, come, and listen to what other investors they know and like have said and done and worked with the companies when they were post-revenue, pre-revenue, and then say, yeah, I think I want in on that. I trust these guys. I know they work. I know they do good due diligence.
Now, is your investor pool, are they from the Southeast, or are you getting firms from outside of the area, right, and country?
No, they're all Southeast. So that's one of our rules.
That's a rule.
The rule is, one of my board members said he wants to bring a bunch of guys down from New York. I said, that doesn't help the problem. We got to have them from the Southeast. Right now, we are Florida, Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee, North, South Carolina. Mm-hmm. And we have a mixture. We have some venture firms that I don't think act like venture firms, meaning they're active investors. We have some higher end angel groups. We have some family office money. We have some corporate money. We have some fundless sponsors, people who work with hedge funds, go out and find deals. But it's got to be, we have three criteria. You have to be able to write a check for a minimum of $250,000. You have to be an active investor. I mean, I don't say if you do one or two deals a year, we don't want you, but I try to say maybe this is not a fit. And you have to have some sort of Southeast bent. Mm-hmm. Many of them do. We need to develop more. The good news is lots and lots of interest is moving into this part of the world.
Now, I got to know the backstory. How did all this get started? Did you have like a real job at some point?
Well, I was a manufacturing guy for a lot of years. I actually came down here to run a plant, and it didn't work out. And I went looking for what I wanted to do, started to work with small companies, and had a couple of niches in funding. And that grew and grew and grew and kind of took over my life. But when the economy collapsed, most of them could no longer be done. I started shifting my gaze towards real estate for a while. And then I got dragged into equity and realized it was chaos. There's just no order anywhere. There's no way for the two sides of the deal to even meet each other. So that's how this started. Came up with an idea I thought would work for everybody and needed a little oomph behind it. So I went to Emory, talked to the entrepreneurship program there.
Now, when you're dealing with investors that maybe in the Southeast are used to investing in real estate or those type of development deals, how do you kind of move them to understand, you know, hey, maybe you should take a portion of your money and invest in this kind of world? Because it's almost like a different mentality. Like in their way of thinking, well, at least I have the land. I own, 100 acres of land I can go and fly a helicopter over and point to. Whereas in some of these deals, they're here today, gone tomorrow.
Right. And you're exactly right. That takes a long time. I mean, you don't create a sandhill road right away. What happens is going to take time, but more and more people are getting into it because your real estate deals, first of all, over the last 5 or 6 years, well, maybe before that, all of a sudden they weren't as good as they used to be.
Right.
And the kind of returns you can get on higher risk, higher return investments are very attractive. And we've taken away a lot of the risk because we're not saying, hey, buy this over the counter stock. This is everybody we have and we feature is post-revenue, has already proven their model, has already shown that people will buy it, and has already had somebody invest in them in the first place. Mm-hmm. So it's a much it's in some cases you could make a case that it's not a question of whether or not they'll make money. It's how much they'll make. So it's a little easier, but the other mindset takes a long time. This is a real estate town here, as are several other places in the Southeast. That's where most of the money came from. But in the long run, that's going to come with the economy growing. It's not going to grow the economy.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the actual forum event. You just had the event a few days ago. And can you share what happened, how it worked? Like, just give kind of a fly on the wall explanation of what it is and what happened.
One of the advantages of seeing a lot of pitch fests is that you can see what's wrong with them and what should happen. And I'm very serious. And you can see how the investors are getting restless and skittish. And you can see how the companies aren't as good and as motivated as they could be. So we try to give both sides what they want. We start about 9:30. We end about 2:30. We move. We do things fairly quickly.
But it's not like some of these are like you get 4 slides at 3 minutes, right? Like speed dating.
And again, we're still refining that. We give companies, essentially a company has a 20-minute slot, of which not all of it is theirs, actually. But they have a 7-minute pitch. They have a 7-minute question and answer session. And then we throw everyone out of the room and have only the investors talk for a few minutes. And if we have the lead investor there, I try to have them kick that off.
Right.
We also are a sponsor-driven model. We're not trying to make money off the event. The sponsorships pay for the event.
Right. The event is more a service for both parties.
Right. And at some point, assuming we can really prove what we do, I think what we'll do is take, if a company gets funded, and only if they get some funding, we'll take a small chunk of the company or a fee. We haven't gotten there yet. Mm-hmm. But that's the way most of them that do this. And you have to do it in a way that it's not illegal. So,
and then so far you've done 2 of these?
We've done 2 of these.
And now you're going to be on a rhythm going forward?
Well, they said twice a year in the schedule at Emory. I think Emory doesn't quite know what to do with it yet. But I mean, some of us do, but right, not all of us. And they can see the value, though.
So what are you doing in between? Do you run other businesses or you get... What are you doing with your time in between these two?
I still do specialty finance. Most of it is not.
Good, because I'm a little light. And I'm driving down to Tallahassee, as I mentioned, and I need gas.
That's not special. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
We have, at this point, I do, if it doesn't quite fit a bank or people can't find the right bank, that's a general term. But most of what I do is nonprofit finance. Huh. Nonprofits that need money to expand or to refinance, which is a great deal for everyone. Project finance, and I'm getting more and more into the legal lending vertical, lending to law firms, lending to plaintiffs. Those are the ones I see the most of. But
I'm really intrigued with the lending to plaintiffs. We got to have you come back sometime and really dive into it. I'm intrigued with that. Are you, Lee?
Yeah, how's
that's
that
kind of cool.
This is fairly new, but I've been around it for years. One of the companies that I used to work with out of New York did it to law firms, and they turned it into a giant business before the recession hit, and their fund of funds behind them disappeared. So that business went away, but they're bringing it back again. What's happened for years has always been personal injury funding, mm-hmm, because personal injury cases have an insurance backdrop.
Right.
So there's always some insurance. You know you're going to get something. On the commercial side, that's been a real specialty thing, because if you lose the case, you get nothing.
Right. So you're going after these contingency cases that help
some of them are
fund.
Yeah, contingency firms. Some of them are IP firms. Some of them are patent firms. Some of them are attorneys who can see they have an opportunity to make money if they have enough funding to see the case through.
Right.
Those are the kind of things that we're looking at. And I got into this world, again, only by accident. In working with the company, I had a gentleman call me up and say, gee, can you help me get pre-settlement funding for my commercial case? And I said, well, that's not really what I do, but let me see what I can do. And now he is on his third funding, and we have become very good friends, and that's how the interest in this started.
Now, getting back to the raised forum, how do you see this progressing? What have you learned so far, and how do you see it evolving?
I've learned that you can never have too many investors.
The investors?
Yeah.
The merrier.
We actually have more solid investors than any other forum of this type.
In the Southeast?
In the Southeast, but I would say in the Southeast. And I'm going out on a limb here and I'm going to make some enemies, but there are some bigger events and they have hundreds of people there, but it's essentially a giant get together.
Right.
And if there are 500 people there,
how many investors?
450 don't matter.
Right.
And even the ones that do matter, there are still probably half of them, maybe more, from out of town. We have our largest cohort, and we restrict who comes. Our board is there. We have an 11-person board. Our sponsors are there. But other than those two and a media person or two, only presenters and investors. So, and one of the things that presenters like is that you have more real investors there per capita.
Right.
And what the investors like, they like two things. First, they know we have eliminated the 75% of the companies that they would shrug off in the first place. So we're not wasting their time. And we've trained them and made them a little better. And the other thing I like, if you go to a large event like that, the big ones, they get besieged. They're the investors. Everybody wants a piece of them.
Right.
They've got money. You know, they've got,
they're looking for deals, right, obviously, or they wouldn't be there.
Right. And so everybody is there trying to get them. We give any service provider who is a sponsor for our event exclusivity.
For whatever they do.
Right.
And how would you articulate the key benefit for a sponsor?
Well, several things. First, you get to get in front of more different cohorts than you would in almost any other sponsorship opportunity. Emory actually designed a course around this in the fall. So you get to be in front of as many as 30 or 35 senior MBA students who are now going back out in the world to work. You get in front of, it could be 35 companies. It depends on how we can structure. We're trying to get sponsors more involved on the earlier stages so they can meet more companies. Certainly get involved with the semifinalists and the finalists. And you get involved with Emory, which is not such an easy thing to do.
Yeah.
And there's no competition for you. If you're a bank, you're the only bank. If you're an accounting firm, you're the only accounting
firm.
What
a terrific opportunity.
What verticals do you target for sponsors?
Well, the six discipline sponsorships, as we call them, are law, accounting, banking, insurance, wealth management, commercial real estate. Because those are the ones that can work with the companies and make money from them. In fact, I kind of backed into what we charge them by trying to figure out what they might get out of it, how much business, and then dividing by 10 so they could have a 10 times return. But we also want some bigger companies because we've got a couple very interested, but I haven't gotten one yet. And my pitch to them is essentially, look, if you're to pick one, Georgia Power, if these companies get funded and they leave, you never get a dime of income from them again.
Mm-hmm.
Help us do this. Help us keep more companies here, and your income is continually growing. So we are looking for the regional companies to come help support this, and again, put their name on.
Now, right now, it's Atlanta-centric in the sense that it's held at Emory, these events?
Mm-hmm. They're held at Emory, and frankly, the majority of the companies are from Atlanta, and they have been. But the majority of the applicants have been from Atlanta.
And the investors, though, come from the outlying states.
Well, I think we have more from Atlanta because it's right here.
Right.
But we had four different states represented in the final eight companies this year.
So why don't you share the final, do you know the names? Do you remember the names? Or that's too hard?
I can remember the names, but it would take me a minute. There were five companies from Atlanta. The three from outside of Atlanta was a company called OB Medical from Florida, Kiatech from South Carolina. One I missed. Company from Tennessee called Vendor Registry. And they all do very different things. We did have, out of the eight companies, we had four that were healthcare, which is, we kind of advertised.
That's consistent with your purpose, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, again, I'd love to have them all healthcare. The problem is if you say you must be in revenue and ready to commercialize and scale up, almost no healthcare companies are like that. Most of them are in that 5 to 10 year on-ramp,
right,
trying to get to where they can commercialize. So there are not enough of them. I think probably in the whole Southeast at this point. Then there were five companies from Atlanta, and this will be tricky because I'm doing this from off
here.
The
I
top
got
of my head.
I got all their names.
Oh,
Decision
got
Link.
Yeah.
Iricept.
Yeah.
Game Plan, United Sciences, Vendor Registry, OBM, OB Medical.
That's that.
Kiatech and Credible.
Yeah, Credible is the last one from Atlanta, and they're all very interesting companies. None of them are fighting each other in different spaces of time. I mean, we're the smallest one. We had about $25,000 a month of revenue now. The largest one is already at about a $7 million run rate. So they're in different places, but they're all scheduled to really take off.
Now, when they do this, is there a winner per se, or just they're all open to get funding? Like, is there a prize at the end of this?
No.
Or this is just like, hey, we all are out there looking for investors, and then you can choose to invest or not.
Right. Yeah, that's the second one is right. I think one of the problems is you get great companies here and they come and they get awards. They win competitions.
Right. And then go out of business.
And then they can't get money. Right. And then they can't get money. It's enough to drive you crazy. You know, well, I won this one and this one and this one. There are some very large competitions that put people through a lot of changes to do what they have to do, and you win, and at the end you get $10,000,
right,
or $25,000. That gets you through a month or two. We said, let's, you know, you read every article you read in the Business Chronicle says, we need more funding here. And we said, we're going to focus on that. We don't want to be bifurcated at all.
Now, can you share if any of these got funding or this is too
early?
Well,
we won't know for several months. Even the first time around, we had a couple of companies get funding out of the nine. But even that took several months, and there are still people talking to each other. Even
right. The
now,
due
6
diligence
later,
takes months and months.
Due diligence, people don't get around to coming up. Nobody walks up to you right away and says,
I'd
love to. Yeah, here's money. Now, my dream is
that it gets more like that, right? That
we'll
time
to,
gets
right.
shorter.
We'll go to the investor session.
So,
and the lead investor will say, I put $100,000 into this company when they were pre-revenue. And they didn't have anything. They've hit every covenant. They hit every sales goal. They're way ahead of their what they said they would do at this point. We're putting another $500,000 in. They need another million on top of that. Who's with us?
Right.
And the whole room will pipe up and said, we are. But hasn't happened.
It's not yet.
And everyone will say, Hail Mary.
Yeah. No, that's wonderful. Yeah. I have no doubt it'll happen. While I go look up the word bifurcated, would you please share with our listeners and our potential sponsors best way to learn more, get in touch with you, have a meaningful conversation with you about this kind of thing? What are some the best coordinates?
Well, the website is raiseforum.com, R-A-I-S-E, forum.com. RAISE stands for Retention and Advanced Investment for the Southeast at Emory.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, it took a long time to get that right.
You put a lot of thought into that.
Anybody wants to call me directly, if you ask for information on that site, it comes to me. But anyone wants to call me directly, the number is 770-722-9787. But that's the best way to learn about it. You can see the companies that were there this time. And we're happy to share information. And all we really want to do, we're very clear about this. We don't want to compete with anyone. All we want to do is augment what's here.
That's
now.
Right. You're everybody's friend. You just want
Hopefully.
Everybody to win.
Hopefully.
Well, thanks so much for coming by. And I know we got in the mix a little bit late as a media property to get a chance to have this conversation. I know some of the folks around the event reached out to us to cover the event. We just couldn't pull it off. But with a little more runway, maybe we come out and be involved in the event. We'll talk that through. We'd be delighted to try to support you guys any way we can.
Great. We'd love to have you.
All right. You going to hang out with us while we visit with our next guest?
Sure.
All right. Next up on High Velocity Radio this evening. I'm already in Tallahassee.
Exactly. Checked out.
Well, we've got her back from Kendrick Law Plastic. I'm done. I can't say anything. We've got her back from Kendrick Law Practice. Darshan Kendrick, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. What'd you learn in that last segment?
Man, I learned a lot. Well, you know, it sort of underscored what I already knew, which is we have a funding issue in the state of Georgia.
It's a funding challenge.
Yeah. Well, luckily, I'm in a position to do something about it. So it just underscores what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, why don't you explain that? What is your day job, and how are you in a position to help in that area?
Well, I guess it depends on what time of the session you asked me about my
day job.
My day job now is actually practicing law, but at between about January and March or April, I'm a full-time legislator representing about 54,000 Georgians in East DeKalb and South Gwinnett, going into my fourth term, seventh year. And I have aged tremendously since I first started.
So what are you doing some work around crowdfunding?
Yeah, my law firm is doing work around crowdfunding. New crowdfunding rules became effective on May the 16th. So now there's a federal option for crowdfunding. Of course, Georgia already has an intrastate offering. It's called the Invest Georgia Exemption. So we already have been doing our own form of crowdfunding for the last 4 years. But now if you want to seek investors outside of Georgia, because right now if you want to use the Invest Georgia Exemption, they have to be a Georgia-based business that only gets investors from Georgia residents. If you want to go outside of Georgia, then the new federal crowdfunding rules are for you. So that's exciting. We'll see how that ends up shaping out. But that's what my law firm is doing. And then my other job is, of course, I'm leading a group of legislators on a series of hearings throughout the state to talk about exactly what Barry said, which is funding. And we had our first hearing at the end of March, and our second one is coming up this Thursday. I have press releases if you want to attend. At the end of June, I'll be putting together a focus group at the Capitol to sort of present my legislative package, present some other reports. We'll hear from TAG, Technology Association of Georgia, Startup Atlanta. We'll hear from the Association of Corporate Growth. So we'll have a lot of power players who know specifically about funding in Georgia talking to the focus group and telling us what we can do as policymakers in order to make sure that we keep that funding going. So, like was mentioned previously, companies don't take money that they get and then have to relocate to Boston or New York or Silicon Valley. They can keep it right here in the peach state of Georgia, where I was born and raised. And of course, the state of Georgia always benefits because we get tax revenue from that. So that's always a good thing.
Now, when you're traveling around the state and discussing this issue, what is the kind of temperature of the people that you're talking? Is this something they're fired up about, or is this something that they begrudgingly or want to get involved with?
Mm-hmm. No, people are very, very psyched about it. I mean, the last hearing we had a lot of different organizations that you might hear about throughout Georgia that attended. And obviously they want more funding here, because if we get more funding here, we'll get more attractive businesses here. And then if we get more businesses here, then obviously we can create jobs and provide an environment where people can live, work, and play. So a lot of people are very, very interested in it.
Are some of the negatives? It's hard for me to understand why you wouldn't want more funding and mm-hmm. more. Like, so what's a reason that somebody plays devil's advocate? What is a reason not to want this?
That's a really good question.
It is a good question.
I'm impressed.
Yeah. You know, I think people are always skeptical whenever you mention something, you know, the G word, which is government. I think people always get a little skeptical about sort of overregulation or overreach, or the opposite end, where you do this laissez-faire type of deal, and then you're not protecting, you know, grandmother's life savings. So it runs the gamut. You have people who are distrustful of anything that the government touches. And then on the other side, obviously, we want to be able to protect people give them access to these opportunities to invest, but do it in such a way that we don't have people who are not educated and sophisticated making those types of investments.
Right. The thing I didn't understand about the crowdfunding, just as a general allowing people to invest in companies, people don't have a limit of going to Las Vegas and investing in a slot machine. You know, I can go to Las Vegas, right, invest all my money on, you know, a roulette wheel, and there's nothing to stop me. But to invest in, you know, a company that I see down the street that my neighbor runs, mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot of regulation around that.
Yeah, and a lot of that comes out of the, the Great Depression and starting with Securities and Exchange Commission, which was set up, you know, for that specific purpose back then. So the SEC is overly cautious sometimes with respect to regulation, because that is their main job, is to protect investments. And you know, we've heard stories of fraudulent of schemes and things like that. But I think one of the good things about the new federal crowdfunding rules is, one, it relaxes that, although they could have done a better job, but it relaxes that aspect of it a little bit. And then the Invest Georgia exemption, I compared it with 32 other states who have a similar crowdfunding. We actually have one of the strongest, best intrastate offerings throughout the nation, where an investor can invest up to $10,000. If you're an unaccredited investor, if you're an accredited investor, you can, of course, you can invest whatever
you want.
But
how tough is that hurdle, really, becoming an accredited investor? Is it, I mean, is that a hard thing to accomplish? Is there a lot of
Well, it's regulatory. So it's dictated by Rule 501 of the securities of the SEC rules.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually defined federally. So there's nothing we can do as a state to redefine that, because that's defined. It's a creature of federal law.
Gotcha.
And so what they're doing now, I mean, the gist of it is, if you have $1 million in net worth, not including your house, you're an accredited investor, or you make $200,000 for two consecutive years, and you can sort of prove it, like tax returns.
Right.
But one of the things that the SEC and legislation that's pending now is trying to do is to remove so much the hard numbers. There's no reason why, being involved in securities law for 6 years, I'm not considered an accredited investor. And that's the only type of law that I do. I have 4 degrees. Like, it's ridiculous that I'm not considered an accredited investor. And so what they're doing now is sort of backtracking that. And instead of having a hard number based on income or net worth, because a lot of people are born that way, they're looking more at your education and experience. So if everything goes correctly, then hopefully I would qualify as being an accredited investor. So they are trying to make some changes into what constitutes an accredited investor and expand that scope beyond net worth.
But that's federally, because the spirit behind it is to prevent someone who's not educated about this to be taken advantage of.
Right.
So to your point of, you have 4 degrees, you've been doing this for 7 years and immersed in this industry, even if you didn't have that dollar amount, you still have the education to know if you're theoretically, if you're being taken advantage of, or you should be able to discern what's a investment that's worth your money.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, many of you that follow me on social media know that I gripe all the time anytime somebody mentions the word accredited investor, because I just think it's the most archaic definition that doesn't quite match with the goals of what the SEC is trying to do. But luckily, like I said, there's pending legislation, pending rule changes. So hopefully that will change, so that even if you weren't born rich or have accumulated that wealth early on, you'll be able to have the same advantages as an accredited investor.
Well, I'm delighted to hear that. And I would think that your Indiegogo success and my success on Kiva should have some bearing, right?
Exactly.
I mean, I'm not playing in Barry's world, but I mean, I probably am pretty well invested in a half a dozen goats. All kidding aside, I know that part of this is an opportunity to make money for investors, but part of my compensation, and I think it would be that way if I were investing $250,000 in one of these healthcare companies, is just that you get an opportunity to play a role in something that helps the planet. And I just hate to see that denied on any front.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And, you know, obviously my law firm represents a lot of businesses. And so the more people that we can have that are able to invest, obviously the better it is, not only for Kendrick Law Practice, but the better it is, I think, just for our society as a whole. I mean, Metro Atlanta, Atlanta in general, is very, very special in the respect that we have we're the fastest growing city for women-owned businesses. And we're number one in Black-owned businesses, which is, I just think that's an amazing and a booming market. And so anything that I can do, obviously, to be able to free up as much capital, both from a policy and a legal standpoint, I'm going to try my best to do it. I'm very low on the totem pole, but
well,
I try to do it.
Well, it's a scary world, though. That terrain looks so difficult to navigate for people like Lee and I. You know, we own our own little network. We got a handful of studios. We're doing this kind of thing. So up to date, we're 100% customer funded. I don't know what 50 grand or 100 grand might do for us, but it would probably open up a lot of opportunities. And I also don't know how much time, energy, investment of resources it would take us just to try to figure out the lay of the land, even if we build a relationship with somebody that says, hey, you know, we want to play. I wouldn't even know where to start. So usually when Lee and I want to know something, we just do a special episode and we invite an expert. So that's how we learn stuff. But
that's
how does,
very smart.
Yes, one of the, this is the nice thing about having a radio show. But how does Joe Sixpack just stay up to date with this kind of stuff? And where do they go to learn this stuff?
Well, I can tell you sort of how I have seen it done and how I keep up with it. I am an avid reader, so you can subscribe to any number of things where you can get e-newsletters, read articles. Of course, I'm active on LinkedIn. But one of the things that I try to do in the community and with my law firm is make sure that I send out as much information as I can in a way that doesn't sound techie or it doesn't sound, you know, did you need to have an MBA in order to quite understand it? So that's sort of the self-education that I do. And then, of course, I have a nonprofit, Minority Access to Capital, which we do seminars and socials with the specific purpose on education on capital markets. So everything from, you know, what is a term sheet to how do you pitch to investors to any number of things.
Barry?
If I can chime in quickly. Also, there are a lot of incubators and accelerators and co-working spaces in Atlanta proper, mm-hmm. to say nothing of other places. Plus, every university has what they call an SBDC, a Small Business Development
Something with
corporation,
the C.
Yeah. And, no, and what they do is they'll give you 10 hours as a starting business of expertise. And they have people who are experts in their different fields. And all, basically, there are a bunch of them all around the states. And they're very valuable. And then they can tell you where to go from there.
Mm-hmm. So, and the SBA does something similar, too. Yeah. Well, they have some free and some paid services that you have as well. But, you know, there's no lack of ways. If you wanted to find the information, you could
find
it. So,
no, there's a personal accountability aspect to this, too. You got to take responsibility for your own learning is what I'm hearing you say here.
Exactly. So there's no shortage.
Can you share a little bit about your law practice? Now, you focus primarily on business law. Is that what your specialty
is? Yeah, my formal title is I do private securities, but I've noticed that unless you are in that world, you don't know what that means. But that essentially says that I work with private companies. So I don't take companies public. I don't work with public companies. If you want to stay a private company or you are a private company and you want to raise money in order to start or to grow your business, then we are the people for you. But we do private placement offerings. Obviously, since crowdfunding is new and exciting, we do crowdfunding offerings as well. But we really try to, we don't introduce people to investors because that gets into the broker dealer world, and I don't deal with that.
There's a lot of rules.
Yeah, there is a lot of rules, which is why you need an attorney. So
just introduce them to Barry.
Yeah, exactly.
And Barry, take it from there. So
we do work with broker dealers and people who are in that world, but what we don't do is directly introduce them to investors. But what we do is once somebody has secured investors, or even if they potentially have an investor, we work with them to negotiate the term sheet. We put together all their documents. We do all the compliance work, which is tremendous because the SEC giveth and the SEC taketh away. And so we make sure that they don't have to worry about the crossing the T's and the dotting of the I's. We do all the paperwork. And the great thing is we do it all for a flat fee. Oh, isn't that wonderful?
Well, no, I think that's unique, though. For those who don't know, I think that's unique, right? It's typically not that way. Usually the meter's running, yes?
Yes, and it forces us to be really efficient with our time, obviously, and get good at what we do in an efficient amount of time. But I also do it because my parents were entrepreneurs, and it's very irritating not knowing what the cost of a bill is going to be at the end of the month. And so if we can give entrepreneurs that stability
and some predictable,
they know from start to finish, we're going to give you this amount and all this is going to get done, and we never have to write another check unless something outside of our agreement comes up. I think that's a great straightforward way for entrepreneurs, especially when they're raising capital and they don't know how much they're going to raise or what expenses are going to come up. So we just try to make it easy.
Now, do you specialize in any industries?
We don't, but obviously because we're in Atlanta, we see a lot of lifestyle brands. So I get to work with companies like one company that's bringing a brand of cognac. I'm not a big drinker, but it sounds cool. and then healthcare, of course, Atlanta is big on healthcare, tech, obviously. Energy, I just found this out, but Georgia is like number one in energy, or Atlanta is number one in the energy sector. And one of the things that the U.S. Department of Commerce has recommended to Atlanta is to find a way to connect the energy sector in Atlanta, which is strong, with energy technology. And we would rise, you know, sort of the cream of the crop as far as innovation in the United States. So I'm really excited about working with a lot of renewable energy companies.
Well, I would think they would be excited about working with you, because while all this is going on, they still got to run a successful business.
They sure do.
I mean, you know, so that to me alone is certainly reason enough to have a conversation with you about all this. So did your phone ring, people knocking on the door? Do you, what is your approach for like having conversations like this with prospective clients? How's the sales and marketing thing work in your world?
Yeah, I mean, we do have 15-minute consultations where we'll talk to anybody about, you know, sort of the services that we have. We don't get into the funding side because there's so many options and we'll be sitting there for 2 hours. But what we do discuss with them is, like we said, the flat fee services and sort of how our client process works and some of the things that we offer that are different. But we try to, distinguish ourselves from the other people and talk with people about how we're different and how we can carry them from start to finish. And then we literally, once they decide to retain us, they sign a retainer agreement, give us our check, and then we take it, you know, the rest of the way from there, because like you said, they need to be focusing on reaching that goal. And trying to do all the little triggering things with the Securities and Exchange Commission. And God forbid you do something that requires state blue sky laws. Then you have to worry about federal and state laws at the same time. And nobody has time to remember the days and what form you need and who to send it to and what that triggering. And the SEC is coming up with a new rule, I promise you, every day. So, you know, that is the burden that we take off of businesses.
So do you have room? Do you still have capacity to take on more clients?
Oh, there's always time for more clients. Always time for more clients. But people can reach me at www.kendricklaw.net. Or you can find me, most of you know, I'm a millennial, so you can find me on any social media, except Snapchat. I haven't really figured out what's that for, but anyway.
You can ask Barry.
Yeah, Barry.
So you can find me on Instagram.
I know what it's for, and that's why I'm not on it.
Facebook, LinkedIn is obviously probably the most professional one, but people can email me, dkendrick@kendricklaw.net. But, you know, I get really, really excited about businesses that are ready to raise capital, both as a policymaker, because it means something's going to happen for the state of Georgia, but also as somebody who came from two entrepreneurs who had to find funding.
And if she doesn't get right back to you, it's because she's on the Hill fighting for you.
Yes, so just, fighting,
but
fighting
she'll be,
hard.
She'll probably get back to you and have a conversation with you.
Yes, always willing to have a conversation. So hopefully people will contact me, because I'm looking for a lot of good people to show up to this hearing that I'm chairing on Thursday at 11:30. It's at the South DeKalb campus of Georgia Piedmont Technical College. Which they have an entrepreneurship center down there, going back to Barry's point about collaboration with these universities and colleges. And then I'm always looking for people who are involved in capital to join my focus group so that I can tell you what I'm going to do, you know, this next legislative session. You can tell me if it's good or bad. Because I think a lot of elected officials,
they don't have time for the people, right?
Yeah, they just propose something and then they find out later it's bad. So we don't want to do that. So help me out.
Well, I can tell that you got Lee fired up, and I thought I saw a twinkle in Barry's eye. I have thoroughly enjoyed having you back in the studio. And just as I promised not too long ago,
thank you.
We'll have to do it again sometime.
Yes, let's do that.
All right. Well, until then, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our guest this morning, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.